Listeners, welcome to yet another bonus episode of a free podcast. We're going to talk about Earth Girls Are Easy. Someone paid for this, so we're going to go on to that. We got Julie Brown, who's a blind spot for me, but now I know. We're
going to tell you who's not easy, us, because we got paid, baby.
That's right. That's right. We got 80s. This is a lot of California 80s. We're going to be talking about the cast of this movie, of course. I think we're going to have to talk about, this is going to probably be a bit Jeff Goldblum heavy.
We're going to go lots of places. I think the people will be pleased.
Me too. Listeners, welcome to another episode of the Midnight Boys Present, a free podcast. I'm your co-host, Rob, and joined, as always, by my, you know, my breast protector-wearing friends.
Breast protectors.
Joe and Duff. Yes, early in the movie, the aliens refer to a bikini top as a breast protector.
Yeah,
yes.
Well,
Are they wrong?
I personally believe in keeping them safe.
Yeah. Yeah, here. The listeners, they keep, okay, here's, let me first, an apology. I keep talking about this new season. And I keep not having a new season exist. Now,
still getting content, though.
The majority of that is my fault. But I, you know, now we're ready to move forward with that. But every time we're about ready to do it, someone opens up their wallet. They take out their Discover card.
Okay. Because you said it was the majority of it was your fault, and I was waiting to see who else you were going to blame it on, because I was like, I don't think Duff and I did
they
anything.
They take out their Capital One.
We also that's
another angle we haven't stressed. You can pay with a credit card, and you can get points that way,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So think about it. You can pay for 1 millionth of a vacation.
Yeah. Some people use their Visa. And they,
we also take Snap. We're not judging.
Do you guys have anything besides a Visa?
I have American Express.
What are you talking
about? I was going to bring this up. I've never seen a MasterCard in the wild.
Discover and MasterCards, I think, are made up.
My parents have a Discover card, and
I'm convinced that Joe's lying, and I agree with you that Discover's made up.
Yeah, I absolutely have seen my dad use a Discover card, and Dennis, friend of the show.
Do when you use a Discover
card, both of them named Dennis, huh?
Do they have to use the old school like credit card?
Okay, now that I'm thinking more about it, it might be fake, and they're paying like the server ahead of time to act like it's normal, as a goof on me. So maybe this is part of the Discover conspiracy. I do think that my bank's debit card used to be MasterCard. So I'm confident I've had a MasterCard affiliated thing before, but I don't now.
When I was, for some reason, growing up, I thought that Discover card was like the poor people's credit card. And really, all credit cards are poor people's cards. But like, I thought Discover was the card that you got if the others turned you down.
You know how you're not supposed to use master bedroom as a term anymore?
What?
Yeah.
You're supposed to use like primary bedroom?
Yeah.
It's sexist.
Come on, MasterCard.
Whatever, right? You're blaming MasterCard for it?
I think MasterCard should maybe change their name.
To primary card?
To primary card.
MasterCard.
But like master
card.
Isn't an inherently like gendered term. Like a woman could be a master. Like carpenter.
Yeah, I think the homes,
slavery.
It's because there literally was like a room for, you know, the slave or the servant, and then the master would be. It wasn't like the plantation owner had a credit card,
a
and then like the slaves had a different card.
The slaves had the Discovery.
The slaves. Yeah, so there's they had the MasterCard, and the slaves had Discover or Diners Club or something.
Jesus Christ.
Okay, we're here to talk about Earth Girls Are Easy. Why are we talking about this? Everyone asked. 5 minutes in. Okay, we got a listener request.
It's good a movie to talk about as anything else we've done, really.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Emily says, hi, Midnight Boys. That's us. I recently came across a movie that I'm excited to hear your hot takes on for the special bonus tier level on Patreon. It's Earth Girls Are Easy. I found you guys through Titanic Minute and love everything you do. I can't listen to your content at work because I often laugh out loud and my coworkers look at me like I'm insane. I'm originally from the suburbs of St. Paul and also have lots of Wisconsin family from the Rice Lake area. And yes, even one relative that lives in Spooner. Guys, you wouldn't know.
I was going to say Rice Lake, that's number one up near Spooner. And that's where those murders were, right, Rob?
There's murders everywhere. Which one?
Can I interrupt you for a moment?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just ask Duff a Minnesota question. Mm-hmm. Are like St. Paul suburbs the Discover Card of suburbs? Are they inferior or superior? Are which of the two cities has the Visa of suburbs?
Well, I can go a couple ways with this. St. Louis. So
the Duff way.
So the Visa of suburbs is probably St. Louis Park. It's like the only suburb I think is legit. Cool.
Well, wouldn't that be American everywhere? Express?
So that'd be the American Express suburb, and that's the suburb where they're one of the few suburbs that accepted Jewish people after World War II, and they're kind of the most liberal suburb.
Okay.
The crap Discover suburb would be like Blaine, way up there.
Is that a suburb or an exurb?
There's always debate about that, but it's like the most outer ring suburb, I believe.
Okay.
They get lumped in with the metro.
Why? Well, she did say she knew St. Paul stuff. Well, I guess she said a suburb of St. Paul. Okay.
Yeah. It's like Woodbury, Maplewood, I believe.
Well, to continue on, she loves to get all our local humor and references. So,
well, Duff just gave her some more.
Yep. Love. Thank you so much for everything you do. I'm here for it and look forward to everything you release. Can't wait to hear your thoughts on the film. Keep it up. All the best, Emily. First off, I hope, Emily, when you go to Rice Lake, you sit down and go to Norske Nook. That's where I like to go.
Norske Nook. I feel like there's multiple Norske Nooks.
There are three Norske Nooks now.
Is that a place where you get food or you get knickknacks?
Both. Mostly food. But okay. You can get lefse there. And I'm a big fan of lefse. That's Norwegian.
Is that the soap fish?
No.
Oh, that's Lutefisk. Lutefisk, yeah. I'm like, are you one of those dudes now?
No. One of those dudes?
There's just certain ages where you just, like, a switch flips, and all of a sudden, like, I'm going to eat fish that's been soaking in lye, and I'm going to love it.
What?
The Lutefisk, it's like a Norwegian thing, and it's like a church basement.
It's a white fish. Yeah.
It's a white fish, and they just soak it in lye overnight.
Yeah. It's cured in lye. Yeah.
It really is?
Yeah.
I thought you were joking.
No, it is. That's what it is.
Norske Nook, sponsor a live Midnight Boys.
Yeah, that's actually, that's our next live show.
Yeah.
It would be a confused crowd just from the church.
It would be a bunch of senior citizens with thick Norwegian accents.
We're going to be talking about The Last Temptation of Christ. I don't know. Are they Catholics? That seems like probably more Protestant area than Catholic.
It's a Lutheran thing. Mm. Yeah.
What's the most Lutheran movie you can think of?
God, probably, I don't know.
Selma.
That's funny. Okay, well, I'd like to thank Emily for three things. One, being one of our great listeners.
Yes.
Two, paying us to watch a movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you.
And mentioning how someone else could do it in her message.
Yeah.
The special bonus tier on Patreon. You can get us to talk about almost anything for $50.
Yep.
We reserve the right to say no. I'm not Correct. Watching Human Centipede.
Yeah.
I mean, I would.
I feel I'm not going to watch the Italian sodomy prison movie.
Oh, yeah.
Salo. I'm not watching Salo. Sorry.
I'd maybe watch that one.
It's great. There's probably
a movie that all three of us would agree we won't do, but I can't think of it off the top of my head.
Right. She did not pay us to talk about Lutefisk or Norske Nook.
But she knew what she was getting. I feel like she knew there'd be some nonsense.
Right.
We've already talked about credit cards and Lutefisk.
Well, I mean, the movie is largely about sex, and there's no better place to go than a Lutefisk dinner Lutefisk. What is it? Lutefisk?
Lutefisk. It has nothing to do with ludicrous. Cadillac spills, Cadillac grills.
I think I've only ever like read that word. I don't think I've ever heard it said. It's not really big down here in southeastern Wisconsin.
And it literally means lye fish. Mm-hmm. It is so a dry.
So is it sort of like a ceviche? So instead of like citrus killing all the germs, it's the lye doing it?
So it is, it's been brined in lye, soaked to remove the resulting caustic solution, and then steamed until it flakes.
Okay, so it is steamed. Okay.
Yes, and it ends up looking like a jelly.
That's
and lefse is just a flatbread.
Yeah.
Norwegian flatbread.
Yeah, I know I've had lefse before, and it's good. But I don't know that I want to have that fish dish.
I've never had it. It doesn't sound good to me. But again, like it's an old man dish.
Well, okay. I'll say this: if I ever have the opportunity to, I promise I'll try it.
All right, let's move on. Earth girls are easy, for God's sakes.
Earth girls, they're easy. That's what I hear.
All right, so what happens? This is something else. This came out in 1989.
Yes,
had a long production. We'll get to, I'm sure. But it stars Gina Davis, and she is a manicurist.
Boy, I'm starting to get sweaty. Just, oh boy.
Getting the
big
vapors.
Gina Davis guy, huh?
Well, in this movie, for sure.
Ooh, yeah. A lot of midriff.
A lot of midriff.
Great midriff.
You see a lot.
Top tier midriff by Gina Davis in this
you
movie.
See a lot without actually seeing it in this movie, if you follow me.
So she works in California in the Valley, and she's got a fiance, Dr. Ted or Dr. Love, and she's a little frustrated, guys. She'd like to be having some
she's
sex
horny.
With Ted.
We can
she's
say that. She's horny.
It's been 2 weeks. 2 weeks without sex for her.
Yeah, she's just popping birth control pills left and right. Yeah.
It's been 2 weeks, and 2 weeks since Ted's latest release for her, and she goes to do some. But he's his nurse. He's a doctor. He comes home. He's just tired, apparently. But no, guys,
no,
that's not what's happening. He's been out with the nurse.
Yep.
So she catches him.
They're supposed to be married in like what 2 weeks or something like that.
Yeah, they're supposed to be getting married soon. And then there are aliens abound. Mac, Zeebo, and Whiplock. Fuzzy aliens. What are they, yellow, red, and green?
No, it was red, blue, yellow.
Blue, yellow. Okay.
They look kind of like deranged Teletubbies.
Yes.
Perfect. That is exactly it. And so they crash land in her pool. And while she's sunbathing, Joe.
Oh, man. How am I the only one going, like, awooga watching this whole movie? I was perspiring.
She's a good-looking lady. No doubt.
I cannot believe this movie is PG.
Yeah, that is pretty wild.
Like, her nipples are sticking out for,
we see
25 minutes of not that I counted.
And it's a horny movie. Like,
it's extraordinarily horny, which like I expected, but then like about 40 minutes into it, I was like, what is this rated? And it was PG.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, there's a gag where like the Jim Carrey alien, like all the girls are watching him with like his foot long tongue and just like creaming themselves.
I think I'm okay with this being PG though.
Maybe we can get to that. Cause I don't have a firm stance on that, but it's a weird rating.
So, anyways, she eventually gets him out of the ship, and she calls her friend,
Candy,
and they take him to the salon, and they shave them all up, get them all ready to go. You know, kind of like that scene in Wizard of Oz when we're about to meet the wizard.
Who plays our aliens, Rob?
Yeah.
And out they come, and it's Jim Carrey, Damon Wayans, and Jeff Goldblum.
It's incredible.
What a trio.
What a trio. And
that's one of my favorite parts of the movie, by the way, like that salon scene with the song. It's pretty. That's pretty fun.
Agreed. You mean with her at the beginning?
No. When
I like that
later
part
when they do the makeover, I guess it was at the beginning when there was a song. Was there a song with the makeover?
She has her makeover first.
Yeah, she has her horny makeover, and it's kind of almost like a Busby Berkeley thing. Like she's in black and white, looking like a starlet, and then later they go back to the nail salon to shave the aliens.
Exactly. Yeah,
it stretches. It's a stretch buying that part, but fortunately this movie's silly, so it doesn't matter. But it's really funny that they can shave them, and all of a sudden they're like,
dudes,
just dudes.
Yeah. And Jeff Goldblum, let me tell you, great looking guy.
He's a hunk.
Absolute hunk.
Yeah, and he wears a shirt as little as possible in this movie.
Yeah.
Right. Same. I would do the same if I looked like Jeff Goldblum.
Well, I would have that written in my contract if I look like Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
You know what's? You know what caused me some cognitive dissonance is seeing blonde Jim Carrey.
Yes.
That's
same.
Remember a few years ago when like they did green ketchup and it's just they changed the food coloring and it's like nope, my brain will not allow this.
So then, they go out on the town. The aliens and Candy and Gina Davis as Valerie, they go out on the town. There's dancing and nightclubs and long tongues that these guys have.
Is the nightclub built into the Griffith Observatory, or is it just kind of a – does it look like it?
I think it just looks like it. I don't
think
it's actually built into it, but that's a good question. Because that would also explain a little bit why Jim Carrey, like, as Whiplock is quoting – Rebel Without a Cause in the movie,
and they
too.
were watching TV earlier, and the aliens initially just repeat what they heard on TV,
right? So then we have she ends up having realizing that her and Jeff Goldblum are compatible anatomy wise.
Yeah, he's got a big hog.
Big old Goldblum, and. And so the pool gets drained, and then we have Woody.
By
Michael McKean.
Michael McKean plays like a surfer bro.
Yep. Yeah. Which I don't think I would have recognized as Michael McKean, to be honest, in this movie, because he's so young, it seems like.
If I hadn't seen his name in the credits, I don't think I would have either.
I noticed it, and I was also laughing that he's playing this part at the age of like 41.
Yeah.
But it's fine, because he's a funny guy, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Right. Always glad when he pops up in anything.
And so then a bunch of nonsense happens. Like they go to
only then does a bunch of nonsense happen.
It was a Dogma 95 film up until this point.
I would say like up until this point, I'm kind of into it. And then it kind of falls apart a little bit for me. I'll be honest. It gets a little messy, a little too messy.
It has just enough though.
But yeah, there's like there's the police involved, and there's like a crash, and there's this weird thing to the beach, which we'll talk about later. Was clearly shot later and added into the movie, which it looks like with about a $45 budget.
Not too far off.
Anyways, eventually, her and Ted, Dr. Love, meet up again, and. They decide, this is where it gets weird too, they decide to like reconcile and go to Vegas and get married, but then when the aliens are taking off, Valerie's like, forget that, and then she goes up with the aliens and lives with them in the
also,
spaceship.
Also, you left out that Mac, the Jeff Goldblum alien, has like a weird ET touch that instead of healing people makes them super horny.
Yes, the love touch.
Yes.
There's also a scene that I enjoy. Okay, I will say, sex scene, fantastic. When like,
yeah, it's just
goes
like
into like those.
Oh, it's wild.
And then when she has a nightmare about having like giving birth to weird alien kids, and there's that alien in the fridge just eating Captain Crunch.
Yeah,
like there's things like that that happen in this movie that I'm just like, what is going on?
There's
I'm
some
glad
weird,
this exists.
Like David Lynch stuff. At certain points, like that's not its primary vibe, but every once in a while it like it goes from camp just to like surreal horror.
Right.
It is wild.
It rocks.
Yes, it is. I like it. It goes all over the place. It's a musical. It's all over the place.
Yeah, it's kind of like a musical, sort of a sex comedy, brief stints of surreal horror. And then, but overall, it's just like a silly, campy movie that's, I thought, a lot of fun overall. It has boring stretches, but that's why, like, you really should be watching this movie with your friends. And then, like, the boring stuff, you're just joking around and talking to your friends through it. You know?
Yeah, I do, Rob. I do agree that towards the third act, we have to get a little too invested in what's actually happening instead of just kind of vibing.
Right.
Because, like, I think this movie works best, and I enjoyed it. This was a blind spot for me, I think, for all of us.
I hadn't seen it, no.
No, I always wanted to because the first, I mean, obviously that title is going to attract attention.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
I found it to not be true.
So this is like,
did you go to the valley?
I did not.
I guess like the font of Earth Girls are easy, and also that title like definitely jumps out at you from the VHS cover.
Yeah, and my only experience with this was I never watched it, but I knew it was on Comedy Central all the time. It was it was constantly on Comedy Central in the very early 90s. But yeah, this was, I thought this was a fun, campy, kind of like midnight movie, and I kind of made like a list of movies that have a vibe like this that I thought of that are, like, so first of all, it's Rocky Horror, and that it's kind of a countercultural lampoon. It reminds me of the 80s John Waters, not the like just gross out John Waters.
No, like Hairspray.
Hairspray, Crybaby. I big Pee Wee vibes in this movie.
I see that.
But then also a little bit of They Live. Like it has just a little bit of like just making fun of how everyone was just the like kind of stoic, uptight, repressive sexuality that was the whiplash to the 70s that was pushed in 80s America.
Yeah.
It is interesting that almost all the movies you name came out within a few years of each other.
Yeah, there was this weird kind of, and maybe this was a result of just gay culture too, but like, yeah, there was kind of a camp, I don't know, explosion in the mid to late 80s.
Right, I mean, Rocky Horror would be the only one that you said that doesn't match into that.
And like the late 80s, early 90s is the only era where like a parody song could inspire a movie. Like it's the only era where like a parody musician could be a star. Like you know, I don't know if star is too strong of a word for Julie Brown, but like
a B-rate celebrity.
Yeah, like and Weird Al, of course, obviously much more famous than her, but still, you know, he could get movies made.
Yeah.
Did you guys know about Julie Brown before we watched this movie? I did not.
I knew one song by Julie Brown, and that is because many years ago I had the Best of Dr. Demento 2-set tape, and she had a song on there, The Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun.
Yeah, I've heard that song before.
That was, I mean, as far as novelty songs go, that was a quote hit, unquote. Like, and she kind of rose to fame, and this kind of gets to your point, like, she could do an 80s Valley Girl voice, so she was famous and parlayed that into being like a movie star, TV star. She had two albums, I think. And, you know, I have nothing against her. I think she's charming in this. I think she's Cyndi Lauper-esque. Like, you're in on the joke.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like to what Joe said, she was kind of like a little more serious, hornier version of Weird Al. Like, she did parody and just kind of like almost like a drag queen, like, okay, my thing is I'm a valley girl. And she had a song on one of her albums called Earth Girls Are Easy, which I did not realize that before the movie, like, this was just a song. And then just kind of that typical like 80s mindset of, oh, we gotta get a vehicle for this person, oh, they have a song called this, and they just eventually workshop that into a movie. Like, it is a pretty, stuff like that doesn't happen anymore.
It's
for lots of reasons.
Well, not for cool things or cool people, that's for sure. Yeah,
true. Yeah. But yeah, so originally, like, this was kind of a Julie Brown vehicle, like it was going to be for her, and the studio For a while it was Warner Brothers, and I think Warner Brothers kind of dropped it, and it got pushed to Dino De Laurentiis.
Yes, the king, the movie king.
yes. Up there with canon for 80s of the Sacred Jedi Texts, I believe.
Are you ever disappointed when that name pops up on the screen when you're watching a new movie?
It's always something good.
Yeah, I would agree on that. Interesting at the very least.
So I couldn't find the whole story, but this kind of got shipped around, and eventually it was kind of released, and it was kind of a flop. And there was a lot of reshooting. Rob mentioned that there were several things just kind of hobbled into it at the last minute, because it seems like they went back and forth about how much Julie Brown should be in this movie. And like at the last minute, they got cold feet, like, oh, we need to put in some random musical numbers with her, which I like. I think those are fun.
Yeah, the blonde song, I think, was added at the last minute, wasn't it? And I thought that was one of the more fun parts of the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, also, like, casting-wise, like, I mean, you know, Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis, you know, were known. But, like, Jim Carrey and Damon Wayans are, like, this is pre In Living Color that they were cast. It's, like, 2 years before In Living Color.
I think I read that Damon Wayans did a year on Saturday Night Live, but it probably was one of those really low-rated seasons. And yeah, I think Jim Carrey was mainly still doing stand-up.
Yeah, he had done, like, Once Bitten, and that same year he did...
Duck Factory. That was the show he was on, wasn't it?
Right, and he also... there's the last Dirty Harry movie called The Deadpool. I just put a screenshot of him in that movie
isn't he a punk or something?
He's like a Axl Rose type.
I
like,
remember that.
You know,
the movie. Hotel that, Satan.
He's in that movie that came out the same year. But yeah, I mean, this was, you know,
And Gina are the big stars in this.
Absolutely, and Julie Brown for, you know, not a star, but I mean, like, she was probably the next biggest star.
People would know
her
name.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the casting's great. It's fun. You could tell. I think part of it is this director. he apparently was very detailed and demanding, and they had to keep doing reshoots and stuff. And I don't think he was the right guy for this movie.
I think he was and he wasn't. Some of this movie, like, it fires on all cylinders for me, but... Then, like I said, like in the third act, I got a little bored and just kind of stopped paying attention.
I mean, the best parts of the movie are the musical numbers, and he's a music video king. So yeah. I think that you take him away and that stuff doesn't work nearly as well, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is some of the better stuff.
There's this whole thing with like the gas station, and there's a mistaken identity.
Oh, all that's just
like that.
Not great.
I don't know if that's like his. That's in the script, though, you know? Like.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the dead parts aren't really because of poor direction. It's just like
They
should have just chopped this down to like be an 85-minute movie.
Yes, agree.
And probably made it even hornier and just eliminated a lot of the story. Like, you can get rid of the bad guy. Just she dumps him in the beginning and then that's it.
I mean, the best part is like the aliens discovering stuff and the musical scenes.
Yeah, just make it silly.
The dance-off with Damon Wayans, I thought, was delightful. Like, at first you thought, like, they were just going to, like, you know, physically fight, or it was going to turn out, like, you know, the joke was going to be that the alien's really, really strong and he breaks his arm or something. But, like, they have an old-fashioned dance-off, and it's really, really fun.
Yeah, absolutely. We didn't even talk about the bad guy, right?
Dr. Love?
Yeah, Dr. Ted.
Dr. Ted, yeah.
So, I mean, you guys, I'm sure both recognized him, right? As the bad guy from Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, yeah. He's a that guy.
Yeah.
I didn't recognize that until you just said it.
Yeah. So I didn't really know much about him, but I was like, oh, it's the bad guy from Dumb and Dumber. And like, he was in Saturday Night Live, I guess, for like a season or two. And tons of movies, tough ending, but definitely one of those.
Oh, I see. He's dead now. Okay.
He killed himself, slitting his own throat.
Boy.
Yeah.
Well, that's hardcore.
Pretty rough. Because I was like, man, he died when he was like in his 50s? And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's rough. Bummer. But I mean, as like a really douchey like bad boyfriend, great in that role.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, perfect casting on that. Yeah, I mean, and then so the other thing, there's this. I'm not familiar with this. Maybe you guys are, but I feel like we should mention it. Is this movie helped inspire Britney Spears song or video?
I'm gonna need you to say the other name. Just I want to hear how you pronounce this.
Iggy Azalea.
Ah, damn it! You did it right. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. Iggy Azalea.
Yeah. So there's.
I'm not familiar with like I know Britney Spears and Iggy Azalea. I'm not familiar with that song and or video.
I'm not either.
I don't believe it was a huge hit, though those are big stars.
Yeah, so I was in 2000. What year was that out? I don't even know.
Iggy Azalea was big like at least 10
2015,
years ago.
2015, yeah. I think. So anyways, yeah, this movie ends up like, you know, so this movie does kind of become like a campy.
Oh, it's a cult movie for sure.
You know, cult
like
movie.
I hear it brought up every now and again, but it's usually, you know, in the same kind of vein and some of those movies I mentioned, like, you know, Cry Baby or something like that.
I also kind of dived into, like, I was thinking of another thing. You were talking about, like, movies, which reminds you of. But also, like, you know, the whole Valley Girl idea. I was kind of thinking, like, that's such a moment in time thing, too. Right?
Yeah. The 80s and I guess even into the 90s was just glorifying Los Angeles. Like, that was... This was like the era of like, New York's a hellhole.
Yeah.
So like Los Angeles was, you know, sun and blonde women. Like that was the thing. Like,
yep. And surfing and then, yep. And then the San Fernando Valley. Yep.
Driving up and down. This was the, you know, kind of goes along like the glam metal, like the Sunset Strip thing.
And so I was curious, what makes Valley Girl? Like, what is, you know, how do you know if you're hearing Valley Girl? And I learned a couple things. Some of these are obvious. The most obvious one.
What was your authoritative source for this?
What would you think, Duff?
Quora.
Wikipedia.
Oh, it's close.
Okay. So the first one I thought of right away, which is using the term like.
Yes.
Right? That is the thing I think of most when I think of Valley Girl. And then the other ones that I didn't really realize what the term was, but uptalk. Do you guys know what uptalk is?
Yeah, where you kind of end a sentence on...
Ending something like this?
Yes, exactly. Yes. So sort of like kind of ending every sentence you say with like a question, right? So sort of being like, hi, I'm Rob, and I'm a podcaster. You'd be like, hi, I'm Rob, and I'm a podcaster?
Yeah.
Right? Like, you sort of end everything up like a question?
Yeah. And then you get the elongated, like, oh, my God.
And then vocal fry being the other one, which I can't even try to do vocal fry. But that's like the like that guttural vibration sound.
Yeah, like when you're disgusted at something.
Yeah, like it's like you often hear Britney Spears actually has this.
Yeah, like, like that. Like, I just sound like a cat having a hairball.
Yeah, it's more of like a, you'll know it when you hear it. It's like when someone, like, it's often like women, you use vocal fry, and it sounds like they're so disinterested and bored by they're saying.
I've heard that a lot, so it's just white. It's just white noise to me at this point.
So those are some of the like qualifiers and features of Valley Speak. So now we know.
So Valley Girl is usually Van Nuys is the Valley, correct?
I think it's just like the neighborhood of San Fernando Valley. Yeah.
Okay. And so, and again, like, this is just what like 80s pop culture taught me, is that it's usually blonde. It's usually a mall rat. Usually horny. The Valley Girl's usually horny and easy because Earth Girls are easy.
Let me tell you. I will say one thing I enjoyed about this movie, and I enjoy about a lot of movies that are like this, and we talk about it a lot, but I'm going to bring it up again. Make my movies horny. Love a horny movie.
Okay.
You know? I mean, just let's...
Boy, surfaces in the discourse, like, what, two or three times a year on social media where like, people get mad that there's sex in movies, but you're here to say more sex.
Make them horny. Yeah. Yeah.
And to go back to I'm now pro this movie being PG because it's from that era when, you know, you could, and this is a little bit of a cheat because the PG-13 came about halfway through, but this could have been PG-13 halfway through the 80s, that is. But I mean, we used to have PG movies where a guy would get a blowjob from a ghost. I think we were a better society when that happened.
I mean, we talk a lot about this in the erotic thriller season, but, you know, I want good-looking people. When a good-looking people are on the screen being good-looking, I want there to be some attraction and titillation. Give it to me.
We used to make family-oriented movies about a kid's mom back in time trying to bone him.
Yeah! Yeah, like the classics.
Yeah.
No, I mean, like, what I think, what, you know, what I don't, you know, what is bad in a lot of these movies in this era do have is there's, like, misogyny and there's, like, sexism. I don't want that in movies, but I want horniness.
But one thing that is very nice and refreshing in this is that Gina Davis, she makes her own choices.
She's in full control.
She's not taken advantage of.
No.
And, yeah, she wants it. She wants some alien D.
She, yeah. And her fiance won't give it to her, and she was like, you know, not interested in the alien dudes. And then they got shaved, and she saw the, you know,
there was a Jeff Goldblum underneath that Teletubby.
Yeah, to be fair, I don't want to have sex with a Teletubby either.
Yeah, so, I mean,
I don't think she's being shallow.
No, yeah. I don't think so either.
Like she said, she didn't even know if it would work.
Nope. But then
I mean, she's not like that freak lady who had sex with the fish man in Shape of Water. She's a weirdo.
That was cool.
I support
aliens, humans having sex with aliens in movies. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I'm pro.
Yeah, I'm okay. I like how you added in movies too. Just to be clear,
that it's a good idea in real life. I can't. I don't want to get sued for recommending
that. I'm gonna need some NASA research on that before I make an opinion. I'm not saying it's bad, but I'm also not saying it's recommended.
Okay.
Yeah.
Before we move on to other things this week, it has to be asked. This is our first Jim Carrey movie that we've talked about.
Is it? Because we've talked about him. No, we talked about Ace Ventura.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. We literally did Ace Ventura. Man. That's true. Okay.
Go ahead. Make your pitch.
Joe rolled a grenade into our.
I was not trying to be inflammatory. I didn't. let me look at what I said again.
Just, you know, I'm just trying to enjoy an evening at home. Enjoy my life.
I didn't say best performance. Period. I said best physical performance, because for half the movie, he can't talk. And he's underneath a bunch of fur and makeup. Yet I was still laughing a lot at these little things he's doing with his eyes and his face. He's funny.
It does feel like for him and Damon Wayans, they were just like, all right, just go do some stuff in the background. And they're just like making it up and improvising as they go.
And it was really funny.
Yeah, I thought they really committed to it. And then, I mean, obviously, they were like, look, this white guy can make really goofy faces. Let's have him do that. And there's nothing wrong with that.
It works.
One of Jim Carrey's things.
It works as Whiplock. I mean, I will say, like, watching it, I'm like, this is early Jim Carrey. Like, this is absolute, like, Jim Carrey stand-up.
This is rubber-faced Jim Carrey.
Yeah, yeah.
One thing also about how horny this movie is, it's immediately horny because the reason they crash is because...
Oh, yeah.
Was it Whiplock and Ziplo?
Whiplock and Zeebo.
And they're like looking at porn, kind of like a weird hologram of a good, like an alien lady.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this movie immediately gets like, I won't say raunchy, but it's adult gags.
I mean, agreed. The gags are adult oriented, which is a weird thing to say. But. You know, the PG thing we were saying, like, it is harmless enough that you, like, if I watched this with my son, he would just laugh at aliens making silly faces and doing goofy things.
Yeah, it kind of, and maybe that's a reason that it kind of bombed in theaters, is because it probably both seemed like it could be a kid's movie and kind
right.
of a sex romp, and I feel like no one was entirely, I'm still not entirely sure, I guess, but now I am. It's just, I feel like it it's one of those things where it was probably really hard to market.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it too. I don't know, like, I guess I didn't try finding trailers or stuff, but, like, you look at the, you know, the poster and stuff, it seems like it's for kids.
Yeah,
and it's
exactly.
PG. I can imagine parents being like,
it's called Earth Girls Are Easy, Rob.
I know, but yet look, I know it is.
I don't think any parent would be tricked by this one.
Wow. I don't know, Joe.
Earth Girls Are Easy. That's what it's called.
Well, I know, but parents took their kids to Bad Santa and got mad.
People are pretty dumb.
All right. I guess.
You know, I mean, very dumb.
I did not realize that Gina Davis and Jeff Goldblum were married in the 80s.
Yes.
Somehow that escaped me. And they did three movies together, all of them kind of not camp, but two of them were kind of like parody. There's this one, and then it's a Transylvania 6500.
Yeah, some numbers.
And then an all-time great, The Fly.
The Fly, yes. Yes.
Absolutely.
And so, number one, I didn't realize they were a couple. Number two, I thought that this was kind of an odd movie for both of them to do at this point in their career, because, like, Jeff Goldblum, I think his big, like, critical breakout was The Fly. Like, I know, like, that was when he really started becoming, like, a household name. And this kind of seems like a weird movie to follow up, like, in a sense, a big break with.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I also, like, doesn't this movie have, like, when was this movie filmed? Like, wasn't it?
Yeah, because it took a while.
It started in
released.
Late 87, right? And yeah. I think it might have just been, like, by the time he
maybe
had committed
to it. Maybe he had already signed on for it. That's true.
Yeah. Apparently, I read that him and Gina Davis just, like, were madly in love and just made out all the time.
They were horny. They were method actors.
Yeah. cute couple, man. Good looking couple. And let me tell you, Jeff Goldblum is one of those guys, like, if all you know him from is Jurassic Park, he's good looking in Jurassic Park too, but you see him in, like, the 80s and movies and you're just like, man, hunk.
Yeah, I don't think when we were in, like, the big movies were Jurassic Park and Independence Day, and I think it was, I didn't realize how ripped he was until I watched The Fly whenever that was. I'm like, holy, this guy is all muscle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good looking guy, and listen, you know, I wouldn't kick Gina Davis out of bed for spilling crumbs.
No, if I was at a on vacation and those two told me they liked my vibe, I'd be like, hell yeah.
So. Her career is interesting in that it kind of like
kind of sad in some ways.
Right. I mean, like, Beetlejuice, great. The Fly, great. She's really good
in
this movie.
She's an Oscar winner, which I always forget about, but I think
what
she's,
is she an Oscar winner for?
The Accidental Tourist, I believe.
Really?
Quick fact check this.
I've never seen that movie. Yeah, she won Best Supporting Actress. I'll be damned.
She was an A-list talent. And
League of Their Own, Thelma and Louise.
Yep. And then she just kind of disappeared. And, you know, it's just this really sad stereotypical, like, oh, I turned 40. And she's been very open about that. She's been like, the roles I was getting were all of a sudden, like, mom roles. And she did this interview. And she's now, like, she does a lot of work trying to level the playing field for representation for women in Hollywood, and she has a foundation, I think the name escapes me, but it just really sucks that, like, Gina Davis was just taken from us in her prime for, like, more than a decade.
This goes back to, you know, to just fat bee stung up Tom Hanks. And you've got mail versus what happened, like, watch his career after that in as an actor versus Meg Ryan's.
So Oh, and before I forget, with Gina Davis, she did a very good and open, she gives great interviews because she, you know, she doesn't give any Fs. And she was talking about, Rob, I think I don't know if you brought this up on air, but I know that you once wanted to do like a season or about like late 70s, early 80s, like strong female leads, like
women cinema. Yes.
Yeah. Like Sally Field, Meryl Streep, Sissy Spacek, like that kind of actress where,
yeah.
Where
in the 80s we had a lot of women's pictures, like so produced by women. Yeah.
Gina Davis was saying that around the time of Thelma and Louise, she says, so I'm quoting now, she says, around that time, movies that incited the audience to want to say, kill the bitch, movies like Misery, Fatal Attraction, which was earlier, and Basic Instinct, psycho bitch roles. Then she says, it's fine to make a few movies like that as long as they are part of a larger mix, but there was no mix. And that's actually, I'd never really thought of it that way, that you kind of had a lot of movies of that era, and, you know, just popping into my head, like Single White Female, Hand That Rocks the Cradle, like just really sexed up, crazy women.
Villainous women, yeah.
So
Misery is not quite the same thing, but
that, well, not sexed up,
but still like the same kind of principle.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Mean.
Yeah.
Mean lady. She did mean things in Misery, Joe.
Yeah. She hobbles them.
She can hobble them. Yeah, she one thing I gotta wonder about Gina Davis is like she got to be with Jeff Goldblum and just, you know, the sexuality that radiates off Jeff Goldblum, what that must have been like.
I think I know where you're going with this.
And then your next husband's Rennie Harlan. Come on.
Yeah.
Well, there's always whispers about Jeff Goldblum being not maybe that great of a guy. So hopefully at least Rennie Harlan was faithful and nice to her, you know.
Well,
I don't know about...
Apparently Gina Davis has good things to say about her time with Jeff Goldblum. I think
yeah,
I read some
I think
quotes
it's more
he
can be a little handsy.
Yeah.
A
little touchy touch.
But I don't like that.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Don't come after us, Jeff. We're all fans.
Yeah.
Unless you're doing that, then we're less fans. What else do we have here? Okay, so I don't know this question.
Yeah, so this is mine. So
yeah.
In another kind of weird LA 80s thing, in the end of this movie, this woman shows up at the gas station scene, and we're just, I think for us, like, I'm like, who am I supposed to know who this is? And it's Angeline, spelled A-N-G-E-L-Y-N-E. And I'm trying to think of like a present day version of Angeline. She was just someone like she had billboards in LA and she just became famous because she was not quite Valley Girl, but of that kind of build. Because of the hoots. Mm-hmm. Thank you. like she had a pink Corvette and she would have billboards that were seen in movies. And they were just around LA. She was kind of connected to various bands around the scene. And so you guys hadn't heard of her either. I was
No.
It was just very, like, if you look at her Wikipedia, it's a whole thing. And I
yeah,
guess,
she apparently ran in the California gubernatorial recall election.
Well, who didn't? but again, she had several albums and just was in, oh, Rob, she was in Phantom of the Paradise earlier.
No.
She was in a bunch of music videos, just like a personality who, you know, kind of just the original famous for being famous. And I was like, who am I supposed to know who this person is? Because they draw attention to her. And
yeah.
You just don't really. I have the same thing with like Twiggy. When I see Twiggy from the 70s, like she's in Blues Brothers. And now it's just kind of weird. Like, what was the Twiggy thing? And
right.
That's kind of this Angeline thing, the I guess that.
So really, it was mostly because of billboards.
I mean, according to Wikipedia, yeah.
Huh. But I know what you mean. She showed up, and they make it seem like, look at this person. Yeah. Like, I don't know who that is.
I guess she did models, and yeah, there were billboards around town, and they would just say her name with her posing, and. You know, just willed herself to become a celebrity. So good for her, I guess.
We should try that. Maybe billboards are the way to go for us, guys.
Yeah.
I will say, I'm sure you guys read it, but Did you see the unfortunate timing of the Earth Girls Are Easy stage show?
The musical.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And, yeah, I laughed about that. Yeah.
So they're going to do a musical.
Which makes
and,
sense, by the
yeah.
way. There
yeah.
Yeah,
this
be.
Actually probably would work better on stage, I think. I think someone who reviewed it said the same thing.
And they were, you know, they weren't going to have any original songs, but it was going to be a stage show, and it was going to be good. They, the problem is, the show started on September 16th, 2001.
Yeah, they're trying to get funders a few days after that horrible tragedy on 9/11.
What a bummer, man. I mean, you know, for a lot of reasons, but tough timing on that show.
Yeah.
So it didn't happen. You know, what are you going to do? Anything else you guys want to talk about with Earth Girls Easy? Oh, Joe, the music video.
Yeah. So I thought I could recommend to Emily and anyone else who's a fan of this movie and sort of its campy, sort of silly look. Like I think we all agreed the best parts of this movie are largely the music numbers, right?
Yeah,
agree.
Music and dream sequences.
And,
yeah.
And, the director Julian Temple is. You can look if you guys. Well, if you guys open his Wikipedia page, they have a list of all the music videos he made, and he has made some absolute bangers. Some of my all-time favorites.
Even if you weren't, you know, didn't have cable, weren't of maybe that MTV era, just like the video for Stray Cats, Rock This Town, Come On Eileen by Texas Midnight Runners, a David Bowie song called Jazzin' for Blue Jean.
Do You Really Want to Hurt Me by Culture Club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of Tom Petty videos, Wilson Phil. Oh, Hold On, Wilson Phil. So you guaranteed you have at least absorbed one of this guy's videos.
Free Fallen.
Yeah, he really kind of rode, you know, what was the video era. Like, he kind of looks like he got out around more or less the mid-90s and maybe did a couple after that. Return to Innocence, Enigma, that was on all the
time. Yep. There are so many bangers on here, and I thought, first of all, Come On Eileen is a big one for me. Like, great music video, and it like captures what's great about that song. Just march around with the boys and the ladies. Yep.
Just march around, man.
Just march around. It's perfect. So I wanted to just point out a couple connections for me to this guy. For one thing, his music videos for Judas Priest, I have extremely fond memories of. And I looked them up again, and they all hold up really well. He really understands, like, making a metal music video, you need to either you have to go all the way to one extreme or the other. It either needs to be
he did the video for Breaking the Law. That
yes, exactly. That's exactly what I had in mind with this point, is that it needs to be either the like the most badass thing in the world, or it needs to be the silliest and campiest thing in the world. And Breaking the Law does a great job of moving towards camp. He made a lot of really great music videos with Judas Priest, and Breaking the Law is one of them. And then, so what I wanted to dig into to research for the episode was some of these videos on this list that I hadn't seen before, and that's why I sent you both the link, and I sent it way too late because it was the last one I was going to watch. Too Much Blood by the Rolling Stones.
I watched it. It's incredible.
I watched this. I also like this song. Is that all right? I think it's a fun song.
Well,
it's not. I don't know. It's fun.
I'm in for it.
I will say that I like the song. I don't know if it's a good Stones song.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the scheme, it's not like a top 25 Stones song. Yeah. But
it's
like
not probably top 80. Top 100.
It's a fun song, man.
But the video looks like a yellow horror movie. Am I saying that right? Like, like it's
yellow.
Just like, it is wild. It is grimy, but also like campy. Like,
it's great evidence for the critical importance of having people that can say no to Mick Jagger. I don't think the song is that good, but I would also say it's not bad either. But it's pretty ill-conceived, and also on an idea that's kind of dumb, that there's like too much violence on television and movies and stuff like that. And I think that that's a bit rich coming from the Rolling Stones of all people to like start policing what's in media. But I find Mick Jagger's massive ego largely funny, and I think this this music video is a great example of that, because I don't. So the concept of the video is basically the rest of the band is trying to kill Mick Jagger with chainsaws, and yes. I don't think they were acting. I don't think you probably had to work too hard in 1983 or whenever it was to
1980 get, anything.
Probably. Yeah, to get hey Keith Richards, we want you to chase Mick Jagger with a chainsaw like you're trying to kill him. Like he would say yes before you finish the sentence.
There's also a portion in the song where it's kind of like a spoken word poetry slam about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, I read about it. Mick Jagger improvised that. He's like, I'm not really a very good rapper, but I was like, oh really, Mick?
Yeah, there's a lot going on in just the song and its lyrics, and it's I like that it's got a pretty prominent trombone riff.
Yes, it's a pretty good music video. I mean, this guy was good.
I think the music video is very fun, but very bizarre.
Yeah. So there's also several close-up shots of Charlie Watts also look like he wants to murder Mick Jagger. He looks very unhappy to be there, which, again, I think for the most part, he probably was from, I don't know, the late 70s through the 80s. I don't know. But
this guy, Julian Temple, I think... got really early what music videos were, but the people who were starring in his videos sometimes didn't. And I think that's what's like, I don't think Mick Jagger had fully grasped music videos, and he's just like, oh, it's like a concert, we'll just do some spoken word and I'll just do a massive amount of blow and do whatever comes to my head.
And the cocaine part, that part probably does work for music videos, but the issue was like, yeah, he was in his prime before music videos were around, so like with those artists, not all of them intuitively grasped, like yeah, you're exactly right, totally grasped what it was for.
Yeah, I didn't realize what I so many iconic videos, stuff that if you're of, I think, our, you know, elder millennial age, they're burned into your memory in some way.
And thank you, Emily, for asking us to visit a movie we hadn't seen.
Yeah, I've always wanted to
talk about.
I'm glad I did.
It's been a blind spot. It seems like something I should have seen long ago, but now I have, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that a movie that's definitely probably, I mean, I'm sure, I think all of us had to watch it kind of on our own for this, but it would have been a more fun like thing with people.
I watched it with my wife, and we were laughing pretty hard at the sex scene rainbow shot when they joined together.
That part is great. Well, listeners, you know, we're going to have a new season unless people keep paying us, and then we'll just keep doing that instead. Otherwise, you can just go to patreon.com/themidnightboys for $2. You get access to, man, I don't know, it's a lot.
Dozens like of episodes.
Yeah, 50-plus episodes, I think, of episodes we've done every month for Patreon. So you can go do that. We talked about Phase 4 recently and Driving Miss Daisy. We go all over the place there. And yeah, otherwise, buddy cop movies. That's our next season that we are going to start recording very soon.
Hell yeah.